record.
Hi, everybody. I am Jennifer, compulsive eater. And now I'm going to try to find a way to look at the screen that's not totally distracting. Sometimes it's hard to see yourself moving in a box. That's distracting. But then if you have the speaker view, that's distracting as well. So I just want to get that stuff out of the way first, because it is something that I do struggle with on Zoom meetings. I love that I can see people and go to so many different meetings. And I really feel like it's been a huge benefit and, a benefit of this period of time. And just because of what our topic is today, the people that do service on Zoom meetings, that's a huge, huge deal. I know that, I think before the meeting started, Ken was talking to Vivian about how they've arranged the PayPal button on the website. So I'm part of the Foothill Intergroup, and I can tell you we've gone round and round, first of all, trying to figure out, do we put the PayPal button on? Finally, we put the PayPal button on. And all of the people who don't have any professional experience who are just like, yeah, this means so much to me, we'll just figure it out. And one of the things that I've really valued about service is that I've gotten a lot of experience with a lot of very graceful people. So I came into program in 2007, in October of 2007. And I came in the Pasadena area. And one of the first meetings that I went to was a very large meeting. It was a recovery from relapse meeting. There were about 60 people there. And every week there would be a speaker who shared about recovery from relapse. I thought all meetings were that big. And I thought all meetings had so many people that wanted to do service that they had dual service positions. I mean, there were probably 15 service positions at this meeting. And my sponsor, I was there for a few months when it was time for elections, and she said, you should take a service position. And so I took the secretary position. I was a co-secretary with someone. And immediately, like, five people came up to me and they're like, you know, the meeting, we're actually kind of bursting out of the space, and the hospital has talked to us and we need to find a new place and blah, 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 blah. And I just remember thinking, like, I just got here. I don't know which way is up. I don't know what to do. And I had a co-secretary who was like, you know what, don't worry about it. I know how to do this. You are 2 months in, you just keep coming back. You show up on it when it's your weeks to show up, you open the room, you know, you read the format, but very, very grateful. And I got a very good sense at that early meeting of what it meant to do service. And so when I first came to meetings, if you couldn't do your service position, you had to find someone else who could do it. You know, over the years when I've gone to smaller meetings, we would just have the literature person not show up for, I don't know, a month. And then someone would say, oh, I guess we should, do we call the literature person or what do we do now? And I was very grateful for early on doing service and people showing me like, hey, it's okay. We're all just doing the best we can. But if you can't keep your position, call somebody else at the meeting to cover it. And it wasn't said in a punitive way. It was about, you know, service is what keeps OA going. Because we are a volunteer organization, there's nobody who's not going to get a paycheck if they screw up. You know, it's just everybody doing the best that they can. And so that was very helpful for me, and also helped me to take service positions, because I was very, very afraid to take like a secretary position, because I would think, oh my God, well, what if I have to miss? What if I have to miss? What's going to happen? And also because I'm an isolator and a control freak. What if I'm going to miss? And then my sponsor was like, well, just call somebody. Call somebody, see if they can take the key, see if they can open the meeting, see if they can collect the money, see if they can any one of those things. And I was raised to be extremely self-sufficient, self-sufficient to a fault. So I felt like, well, I can't really do this if I can't do it 100%, and I can't, you know, if I can't be the star of the service position, I can't do it. So like I said, great to see people saying, no, you can ask for help. So I've done, I don't know, lots of different kinds of service. I've done all the service positions in a meeting. And the one that I found that I really liked that really helped my recovery a lot, one was secretary and the other was a speaker seeker. You know, having to get, I've been at meetings where the secretary is the person who gets the speakers. Then I've been at meetings where that's its own position. But boy, having to find speakers, I went to so many more meetings. I called so many more people. It was just this constant reminder that I was not alone in OA, that there were tons of people. It was also great for me to reach out to people that I felt like, oh my God, this person has 30 years of recovery, and have, you know, some extra time to talk to them about, oh, how do you do this or how do you do that? And the position that I have never been able to do is timer. I've tried to be the timer and I have found it distracting to the point where I'm not able to even pay attention in a meeting. I'm looking at my phone, how many seconds left? Then I'm wondering, okay, the person sharing is in the middle of something. Oh God, now I have to be like, time. And it just was one of those things that I was like, somebody else would love to be the timer, so I don't have to be the timer. Let me think about some other things. I like service. I did group level service for probably, I don't know, like five years. I still do service at the group level, but I had a sponsor who was very involved in intergroup service and region service. And she was also very sneaky. She's so sneaky. I really, really liked her. And we, at that point, had trouble. We couldn't find a special events person for our intergroup. We'd have somebody, they'd do one event, then they'd stop. Or it was the same people who had done the events for like 4 or 5 years, and they were just tired and they didn't want to do events anymore. And, you know, and I really enjoyed talking to my sponsor, and I said, you know, I had an idea for an event, but I don't know. And she'd say, well, you should be the special events person. And I'd be like, no, I don't want that responsibility. And then every couple months I'd, you know, pop up with this other idea. And she very, very gently would say, like, well, you should be the special events person. And I'm just so grateful that she didn't force me or make it, make it something serious. She just kind of delightfully, like, she was always very happy talking about it. Although we did joke that after an intergroup meeting is the time that you really have to make an outreach call. I feel like if you can make it through an intergroup meeting, like, I got it, I did it. But again, you know, that also being a great experience where I learned how to deal with other people. And learned how to deal with other people in the real world. The great thing about meetings, any kind of meeting, a regular meeting, an intergroup meeting, is the structure. Anybody can talk for 3 minutes. And it's like whatever that card is that we have, that like just for today. I can listen to anybody in a meeting talk about anything for 3 minutes because I know it's going to come to an end. I know that no one is going to kind of get me in the corner after the meeting and be like, have I told you about my new food plan? And what's your food plan? And, you know, I'm like, I liked the fact that because there are these guardrails, I learned how to communicate with people. And it makes it so much easier for me in the outside world because I'm a part of a lot of other groups that are not in OA. And when I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, everyone is nuts and there's no direction and what is happening, I think like, well, you know what? I have a higher power. Even if this meeting doesn't know it, there's some greater good for this meeting. This meeting cannot last 7 hours. There will be an ending. And it keeps me from freaking out and going full addict, you know, where I have to, you know, stand up and put my hand on the table and let me tell you all what you're not doing and how you should do it. Like that part has gone away. I feel like I'm jumping around here a little bit, but I want to talk about some of the ways that service has really saved me. And then I want to talk about some of the ways that I hid from my personal program in service. So The first part is, so I was the special events chairperson when my father died. So my father died 4 years ago, and I had just signed on for another year long term. So that was in December. My father died in January. I had an event planned for April, and it was an event about traditions and how we use the traditions to interact in groups. And at that point, I had a sponsee who had just come back from relapse, and she had relapsed at her mother's funeral about a year and a half before. And I remember thinking, this is an amazing confluence of my higher power, how these events have been put in my life. Because I come from a family that likes to eat. My immediate family, my extended family, I'm from the Midwest. I'm from an area where people, that's some throw down stuff. They're really doing that. And I remember standing at that funeral and seeing just tables of, you know, foods, and knowing that, you know, this is how people comfort themselves. This is how people say, you know, when it's too hard, like, people in program are the bravest people I know. Anybody who does a fourth step, I'll put them up against anybody else the next day. To have to look at the next day, I don't mean that, but like to do a fourth step and have to look at your stuff and be able to actually find words for what you're feeling, as opposed to using food to get rid of it. I was able to look at all this food and think, I don't think anybody could blame me right now if I wanted to eat a dozen cookies, but I don't want to, because I know where it leads. And, you know, one of my character defects is pride. I believe that is a character asset that has gone awry, some stubbornness. And stubbornness has helped me. And I thought, I'll be damned if I am going to try to do this traditions workshop after losing my abstinence. I'm not going to do it. So because I had that set up, I thought, no, that's not going to happen. And so I was able to make it through that event because of my higher power, because of my sponsee, because I had committed to do service, and because of my stubbornness. So there was that. Another great thing about being of service, especially at the intergroup level, is when you do things for free, there's a lot of room to kind of make mistakes, have new ideas. No one is coming in and saying, actually, we don't do it like that. Because in a lot of cases, no one's actually ever done it. They're just kind of begging people to do service. Like, yeah, great, do something. You want to make a flyer? And I found out that I really liked design. I liked to do graphic design. I felt like I got very sad when I would see like the one flyer that, you know, and I've done them, like, and it was written in Times New Roman, and somebody knew to make the font 20 here and then the font 10 there. And I was like, oh, I want to put a funny picture out. Like, can we do this stuff? And I realized, like, we can actually cut the costs that we're spending on doing these little one-off flyers. If we know we've got all these events coming up for the year, I can make a bookmark. Great, why don't we make a bookmark? And then someone has all the events for the year, and all the meetings can keep those in their big books, or they can keep them in their 12 and 12s. And so that was something that I just got excited about. And the intergroup was like, yeah, fine, go ahead. I also was the webmaster for a short period of time. I was not doing any of the coding, but I was, you know, kind of putting things on and finding different events. And that's another thing I had zero experience in. And I was like, but I think I can do this. And at different times, I've been able to do different service. So I have two children. Like I said, I've been in program since 2007. I have a child that was born in 2006 and a child that was born in 2010. So at different times, it's been exhausting to give service because I'm a stay-at-home parent and my whole life is service. So sometimes it was very difficult to show up at a meeting and be of service, but I'm like, okay, so the webmaster does what? All from home? Yeah, I can do that. I can make that work, and that keeps me connected to program. So my program has changed in my level of service based on what I have been able to frankly, if I've been able to get a babysitter or not, you know. I remember bringing my children a couple of times to intergroup meetings, and they're like sitting on the floor in the corner with crayons, you know, and I was like, well, we can do this a couple of times, and then we're going to try and do something else. Okay, so some of the other service things I've done, I started a meeting because selfishly I needed a meeting. And I was living in an area of Los Angeles that there weren't any meetings in our neighborhood. And I thought, I was driving, so I'm in Pasadena, I was driving to Studio City for meetings many mornings a week. And I thought, there is a church right around the corner from us. Maybe they would let us start a meeting. And first of all, I called 15 different places before anybody would agree to let us start a meeting. In the future, if anyone's interested, what I have learned is I just look up where the AA meetings are or the Al-Anon meetings are, and then I call those locations because they already had some idea of what we were doing. I started a meeting with one other woman, and for years the meeting was three people. And then it was four people, and then it was seven people. And then the church got sold and closed, and we had the meeting on the sidewalk. And then we went all over again, trying to find other places to find the meeting. And I did not get a lot of calls back that time. And so at one point I just started showing up at churches during their business hours and saying, hey, we'd like to start this meeting, and here's how many people we have, and here's what we can pay. And so we found a different location. And what is the point of this? Oh, I started it because I needed it. I needed it. Which frankly is part of the reason I do any kind of service at all. Like, I need it. I need an excuse to be connected. I need a reason not to eat. And also I'm kind of a busybody. I like to do things. And I like to do things with a purpose. So again, that's like a character defect. Like, I'm a real busy person. So I found it was helpful to channel that busyness and to be like, oh, okay, you want to do something busy? Why don't you go through the old secretary book that has intergroup notes from 18 years ago? Maybe we take those out or see what we can do with that. The one thing that I do want to share, though, is on the other side, about hiding out in program, hiding out by doing service. So I love to have a task. And I do a lot of volunteer work. And at some point in my recovery, in the last about 2 years ago, I realized I was starting to treat program like just another volunteer commitment. I was like, well, yes, we have the flyers ready and the website looks good. And I was neglecting my program. Like, I was kind of like in program, but not of program. And I was starting to gain weight, and I remember talking to an old timer and saying, hey, I don't know what's happening here. And he's like, oh, I actually remember what's happening. He's like, years and years ago, when I was on the LA intergroup, there were a lot of people on the intergroup that gained a lot of weight. And it was because it became a social experience. And that kind of took over from it being the program experience. And, like I said, it's very comfortable for me to have a task that I can finish. It's less comfortable for me to stand in the kitchen at night, not eat, call someone, write something. That's not as easy. Also, I'm not getting a lot of accolades by myself in my kitchen at night when I want to eat, but I am getting a lot of them if I do a good job on the website, you know, so, and also, one of the other times that I had gained weight, you know, thank God for a sponsor. I also sponsor. I have one sponsee now. At one point I had four sponsees. Just want to share, like, I am the poster child for making the mistake, doing it wrong, and then learning. So I had four. Oh, thank you. I did not see any of those other ones. Thank you for telling me that. I'm sorry. I stopped looking at the squares. So I'll just say I have one sponsee now. At one point I had four sponsees because I thought that's how everyone did it. Everyone had so many sponsees and they did it. And I took on so many people that I couldn't I couldn't get back to them in time. There wasn't time for me to talk to them. I had a woman who gave me her first step, and I didn't call her back for like 2 weeks. And then she called and left a message and just said, you know, I think I'm going to have to find another sponsor. I was mortified. I was horrified. I called her back, left a message. I'm so sorry. And then eventually let go of my other sponsees because I realized I was trying to work my program in a way that it looked good for other people. I can do 2 sponsees right now, and that's about it. And I always get into trouble when I try and make my program someone else's, and now the time is done and I see it. So I just want to say thank you very much for letting me share. And yeah, and that's all. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Before we go to our next, I was inspired by what you said. I just want to go here because you brought that moment in your pitch when you said that you are of service. You started a meeting because you needed it. This is real life adventure that happened because of someone in our inner group that did the exact same thing. I brought you back to this page, not because of the donate button, but this meeting spotlight. We have a brand new anorexic bulimia focus meeting that just started on September 8th. And it was because I think it was 2 or 3 weeks before we did a workshop on anorexia and bulimia. So there was a need for it. And the woman who started that workshop got the momentum from the workshop and started a meeting. So that's kind of how it happened. So thanks for carrying that message. Much appreciated. And thank you for your service this afternoon. And with that, I'm ready to move on to our next speaker for today, who is Michael. And Barbara, you have Michael's time already. So take it away, Michael.
Hello, I'm Michael. I'm a grateful abstaining compulsive overeater. Happy to be here. And thank you, Jennifer, for setting the tone for a great workshop. And thank you all to have been putting the meeting together. I was reflecting on this idea of doing service. I came into the program 34 years ago. My top weight is 270 pounds. I was 22 years old when I came into OA. And I've been abstaining a little over 34 years, maintaining 110 pound weight loss. Thank you, GOD. But before I came into the program, I was a brat. That's what I was. I was a brat. I have to tell you that looking back before coming into OA, I don't think it ever occurred to me to do service. I don't think it ever occurred to me that that was like part of the deal. I'm going to joke, but it's very true. I remember when I was in therapy, which is great, and we were talking about what I wanted out of a relationship, what I could get out of a relationship. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I want to get this, and 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 I want to get this. And then my therapist turns to me and says, now, what would you like to give to the relationship? And I was like, what? What do I want to give to the relationship? What? It's as if he had asked me, like, how do you make a rocket to the moon? And I'd be like, what? I have no idea what you're talking about. So I got that wonderful flashback today, actually, when I was thinking this idea of doing service was very foreign to me when I came into OA. So I don't know if that means selfishness, self-centeredness, that was the root of our problems, as the literature talks about. But I do know the idea never occurred to me. On the flip side, I can tell you that overeating always occurred to me. It always seemed to me like the natural thing to do. I can't remember a time when it didn't seem like the natural thing to do. I can tell you today, whether it was 35 years ago or whether it's yesterday, that most of the time when I want to compulsively overeat, it's because I want to be distracted. I want to be distracted from something. It could be something huge, like I don't like my job and I need to change careers. Or it could be something very small, like dust. I need to dust. I'm looking over at my coffee table and I see that there's a film of dust. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. What can I eat? So my experience, which is really all I have to share, my opinion, I have lots of those. But my experience is unshakable. My experience is unarguable because it's been my experience. So I came into OA a brat, a scared brat who on one side thought I knew everything and on the other side was afraid to ask for help. And you know, they talk about the OA program, and I can honestly tell you, I did not do the OA program. I did the Michael program. Little of this, little of that, G-O-D, yeah, no. Read the literature, yeah, no. Call people, be of service, yeah, no. But I'll go to the meetings. I'll go to the meetings. And if somebody says hi to me, I mean, obviously I'll be kind. And I thought that OA was going to somehow rub off on me. I thought the recovery was going to rub off on me. Now, I'm not saying meeting attendance isn't wonderful and great. Believe me, I wouldn't be here without it. But my experience was meeting attendance was not enough to keep my disease in remission. And my experience was I was a member of OA. I was coming to meetings and I was binging my brains out. And I looked around at some of the other people and I was like, there are some other people that have this glow in their eyes, this spirit that's exploding from them. And I said, I don't feel that. I don't know what's wrong. But I knew that there was a different path. I knew there was a different path. Side note, since we're talking about paths, there's always two paths for me. There's the path that says, I am the disease of compulsive overeating, and I am waiting to kill you. And there's the other path that says, I'm your higher power, and I'm waiting for you to ask for my help. There's always two paths, and I can go down either one. But my higher power is definitely a very polite guest, and my higher power will only go where they're invited. So I have to be the one to invite my higher power. Anyway, so I'm going to all these meetings, binging my brains out, wondering what's wrong with this picture. I had somebody who was very kind to me, reached out to me as a newcomer. Side note, my experience is you can give your phone number to the newcomers, but after 35 years in the program, my experience has been I have to call them. I have to call them. It's a miracle that they even came to a meeting, let alone take down a number and call somebody. So it's my responsibility to call them. That's part of what I need to do to be of service to them. Anyways, I was having coffee after a meeting where I was getting ready to go and binge my brains out. And this gentleman and I have a conversation and I said, I don't feel like I fit in with OA. I don't feel like I'm a part of OA. And God bless him. He said, well, Michael, it sounds like you're not. And I said, what? He said, well, so you get to the meeting late, you sit in the back, you leave early. From what you've told me, you haven't read any of the literature. You certainly haven't done any service. You don't have a sponsor. Maybe you don't feel a part of because you're not. He said, it sounds like you're kind of like the person who goes and gets the gym membership. I've got the card that says I'm a member of the gym, but you're maybe just driving to the gym and walking into the room and going, well, I'm here at the gym. I don't understand why things aren't changing for me. because I wasn't availing myself to all the gym had to offer. And that was my experience in OA, that I was not availing myself to everything that OA had to offer. And this person who eventually became my sponsor pointed out something to me very, very early in my program. It was like the first 60 days of abstinence. First page of working with others. Nothing. What, Michael? Nothing will so much ensure immunity from alcoholism, compulsive overeating, than intensive work. What kind of work, Michael? Intensive work with other compulsive overeaters, alcoholics. It works when all other measures fail. And he was like, all right, so Michael, what does this say? What's immunity? And I said, oh, immunity is when you were a kid, you know, they gave you the little thing that they boom, boom, and they put it in your arm, and then supposedly you're not gonna get some terrible disease. I said, that's what immunity is. And he said, oh, good, okay. Well, this says that nothing will so much ensure immunity from this disease of compulsive overeating than intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. It works when all other measures fail. And he said, Michael, isn't that interesting that they said all other measures? Like, what if you ask your higher power for help and it doesn't come? Go help another compulsive overeater. And I can absolutely guarantee my experience for 35 years is I have never compulsively overeaten when I have been intensely working with another compulsive overeater. So my sponsor encouraged me, Michael, you need to start being of service. And I was like, why? Being the brat that I was, I would always question my sponsor whenever they would say anything. I'd say, why? And so he said, well, one, the thing that we just read. And number two, it's been my experience that without it, you won't be able to keep your abstinence. Because the program of OA, like our wonderful steps, they're like planting seeds. Now, if you're like me, who's terribly impatient, I want to plant the seed and see the results tomorrow. But that's not the way seeds work. You plant the seeds and you have to what? You have to wait. And my sponsor said, that's what this service thing is really all about, Michael. It's giving you the opportunity to wait. So that while you're working on your four step, you can go and help somebody else. So I was like, well, what do I do? What do I do? He goes, well, you're brand new, Michael. You don't know much. So, and he said it with a smile. And he said, why don't you be a greeter at a meeting? I said, a greeter? Are you nuts? That's like the worst. I mean, you got to go up to people. And he said, Michael, here's all you have to do. You stand at the front door of the meeting room and you stick out your hand and you say, hi, my name's Michael. Welcome to the meeting. That's it. I said, oh, that's it? He said, yeah, you're a greeter. You greet the people when they come in. The rest of us will take care of the rest of it. Just smile when they get to the front door. You only get one chance for a first impression, Michael. And somebody may be coming to an OA meeting, and if you're the first person they see, and you've got a big smile on your face, and you say, hi, welcome to the meeting, they may remember that. And you know, I just thought of something. You know, when you've been in OA for 35 years, you've ended up gone to a lot of meetings. I've had people who've come up to me 5, 10, 15 years later, and they've said, Michael, you greeted me at my very first meeting. And I've never forgotten that. Now, I eventually became the person who could actually go around the room and look at the people that I didn't know and go up to them and say, hi, I don't think we said hello. I'm Michael, welcome to the meeting. But in the beginning, I literally sat at the front door and I said, hi, my name's Michael, welcome to the meeting. I did that for 2 years. Now, I've done every form of service I think there is in 35 years. I've served on the intergroup. I was the intergroup chair. I was the intergroup treasurer. I served on Region 2. I was the Region 2 treasurer. I was the Region 2 chair, Region 2 delegate. I was World Service delegate, World Service board, World Service chair. I was chairman of the board for 3 years. None of those service positions for me did I do above the group level for the first 5 years. I don't know what your experience is, but again, the brat who knows everything, but also is scared to ask for help. My sponsor eventually said, Michael, based on my personal experience of you, you have the disease of compulsive overeating very intensely. I would encourage you to not do any service above the group level for the first 5 years. I said, why? And he said, because you need to get, if you're like me, because he was speaking from experience, you need to get a strong foundation of the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous and get your program nice and strong. You don't build a house with a weak foundation. You've got to get a strong foundation. And he said, Michael, there is plenty of service to do at the group level. And he was right. He was right. After greeter, there was a lot of things. Literature person, treasurer, program seeker, cleanup person. What? You want me to do cleanup? Me? The person that doesn't know what it's like to be of service? Yes, Michael, why don't you pick up the speaker? Wait a minute. We're going to a meeting and it's 25 miles away. I'm going to pick up the speaker and drive them. Boy, talk about services slimming. I got 30 minutes in the car all by myself with a speaker who had 35, 40 years. I thanked them at the end of the night that I got the opportunity to get their experience. There used to be a meeting, I don't know if it's still there, Friday night Glendale. It was at the Glendale Adventist Hospital. It had like 200 people at it at one time. If you wanted to be secretary of that meeting, there were normally like 4 or 5 candidates. There was an honor in being of service. But I didn't run for secretary of that meeting, I think, like I said, probably till about 3.5 years. Thank you for mentioning about starting a meeting. My sponsor and I started a meeting as well. You know, you only need 2 things to start a meeting: coffee pot and a resentment. And then you can start a new meeting. I don't like that meeting. You know, well, go start your own. All you need is a coffee pot and a resentment. That's when we used to serve coffee at meetings. I don't know if we do that anymore. So anyways, at some point, I did start to do service above the group level. I reached the 5-year mark. I think I actually did it at like 4.5 years. And I started doing service there. By that time, I knew the value of it. And I can absolutely tell you that there were many, many nights where doing service, reaching out to the newcomers, staying late at a meeting and helping cleaning up was the only thing that kept me abstinent. Because I wanted to eat for the first 2 years. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's my experience. So if you're like, I'm 6 months abstinence, but I still want to eat. Well, absolutely. Those seeds that I've planted have not sprouted yet. I still have a lot of problems and a lot of challenges working through life without compulsively overeating. But nothing ensured immunity from compulsive overeating as my intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. I can tell you now, looking back, that all my experiences working for service in OA has been a training ground for me to do those things out in the real world. Whether I learned them or whether they were confirmed when I wrote a parody musical for OA, it confirmed that I could write, that I had a gift of musical writing that I could go out and do in the real world. When I was chair of World Service, and I led a meeting with 300 delegates, it confirmed that I had a gift of leadership. Side note, if anybody says, oh, we don't have any leaders in OA, wrong. Tradition two, our leaders are but trusted servants. We have leadership in OA. There are parameters about how they're supposed to act, of course, in the spirit of service, but we do have leaders. We have leaders in OA, and we need people to step up in order to do the job. I love the definition of a true leader. A true leader is not somebody who's marching in a parade and says, get your ass in this parade and do, you know, march with me. No, a true leader is marching in the parade and you are so inspired by what they're doing that you naturally just want to get up and march with them. And that's what my sponsor said is one of the greatest service opportunities that you can provide, is that you don't say to somebody, you should get to do your service. You tell them how great it is and how you've benefited from it so that they'll naturally want to do it themselves. I'm so grateful that my path was that I didn't do any service above the group level for the first 4.5 years, because it was challenging to do some of those business meetings. And if I had not had a firm foundation, I might not have survived that time. I loved that Jennifer talked about hiding out in service, and my story is a little bit different, or my spin is a little bit different.
You have 1 minute.
Thank you. 1 minute?
1 minute.
No. 30 Excellent. Seconds, actually.
Okay. All right. At some point, I have to continue doing service in OA, but I have to go out and live a life. I don't think God's will is for me to just be of service in OA for the rest of my life. That is a big part of my life, but I think my goal is to learn, to serve, to love, and to figure out what God's will for me is in all my affairs. And I'll wrap it up with this. So in the last few years, my real job has been, how can I keep and learn and remember everything I've learned in service in OA out in the real world? Because ultimately, that's where I want to function, where I wasn't able to function before. So a little bit about Michael and my experience. Thanks so much for listening. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. I connected with you for sure. I am a distracted brat myself, and I'm sure there are people in this room that would attest to that on my behalf. Our final speaker this afternoon is Pam. And Pam is joining us from LA. Pam, we didn't get a chance to speak before. How would you like your time, your 20 minutes?
Five and one is great.
Okay, perfect. Take it away, Pam, with five and one. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Pam. I'm a food addict and a compulsive eater, compulsive overeater, all of those things in San Jose, California. And I'm so grateful to be here and apologize for being late. My internet wasn't working and I was like MacGyver over here trying to make something work. So I'm on my laptop and I hope that this is going to hold up for me. It has so far. I can identify with so much of what I've heard. I've heard so much of my story in the other speakers, and I'll share a little bit about my experience as far as program in general, my compulsive overeating, and I came into program through another program, and another fellowship, another addiction. I'm also recovering from alcoholism and drug addiction. And much of what happened around those things actually had to do with me attempting to control my eating, my appetite, and my weight. It sort of one thing led to another. It was kind of a big avalanche of addiction, but it was all centered around this problem that I thought I had with my weight. I thought that's what the big deal was. I spent a lot of time and energy with that in my life up until I was 45. And then I ended up in rehab. And when I put down the other drugs and alcohol, I started eating the way that I used to. It was as if I was eating everything I hadn't eaten all of those years from my teenage years to 45. And I put on 100 pounds, over 100 pounds in my first 3 years of sobriety. And that's because I started eating the way I used to do the other things when I didn't have anything to help me suppress that or try to manage it. I was always trying to manage it. I went back to that original addiction and compulsion. And then I ended up in OA. And so that's where my real experience with recovery and sobriety and eating sober started. Although my first couple of years were rocky, and 2010 I spent in a horrific relapse, praying for relief from the obsession and compulsion. Not that I really wanted to die, but at that point, I couldn't see any other way out and thought that was what was going to have to happen in order for the insanity to stop. But I was led by my higher power to a sponsor who really cleaned up my food plan and removed all of the triggers. She guided me that way. I was open to it. I was desperate, that gift of desperation, like they say, G-O-D. I was willing to do anything at that point. If she had told me to stand on my head and eat a pile of sawdust, I would have done it, but that's not what she asked me to do. And she asked me to commit to using the tools every day and to joining a group step study and working the steps, which obviously because it's a 12-step program. and that was January of 2011, and I've been continuously abstinent ever since. I'm not patting myself on the back. I know that there's no way that that would ever have happened without this program and my higher power helping me every step of the way up to this moment. I'll go back a little bit, I guess, with my, in our local area intergroup, everyone likes to do before pictures. So I brought a couple of those, and my highest recorded weight was 286. I know I went higher than that. And there's a little after picture. I'm wearing the same shirt I'm wearing now. Just wanted to share that with you. That's just the difference on the outside. The difference on the inside is so much greater. It's immeasurable. But like I said, these 12 steps and 9 tools, this is a design for living that really works. I mean, every day I wake up, I do my quiet time, and I know that without this program, and I work my program like my life depends on it, because I know that it does. You know, and despite the fact that I'm in recovery, it doesn't mean that life has changed. It's not like you know, I mean, things go wrong and people die, throw in a pandemic and fires for, you know, it's life. And I think I'm going to get a tattoo here, life on life's terms. Keep reminding myself that because I always do. But what's changed is me and the choices that I get to make, my attitude, my behavior, and my choices. I get to make different choices today because of this program. And I think one of the greatest services that I can do is staying abstinent, because it, like we say, it frees us from the obsession and compulsion so that we can be of service. And we do have service positions that have abstinent requirements for sure. But eating sober, it's like part of my sobriety for me. It's the thing that makes the difference between me living in the disease, that choice, or living in my recovery. And so I, you know, like I said, I had a rocky start, and probably the most service I could do for a while was showing up at meetings and, you know, setting up chairs, doing, you know, like we say, do what you can when you can. But a life of sane and happy usefulness is what we're promised as a result of working the 12 steps, and service helps fulfill that promise. When I can start to think of what I can bring to a meeting or this world or my life instead of what I can get from it, I think that was a big part of what the disease was all about with me in the first place. I kept thinking I needed this, or, you know, eat this or drink this or do this, something outside of myself was what I needed. But like it says in the spiritual experience appendix of the AA book, that we've tapped into an inner resource that we identify as a power greater than ourselves. I had no idea that that's what I needed to do. I had no idea that that even existed, that there was an inner resource that I could tap into, until I came to program, work my steps and my tools. And so when we talk about, you know, service, there's lots of service that can be done in program, but specifically it's the spiritual principle behind the 12th step. So all the other steps lead up to that, although there's much service that can be done along the way, carrying the message is what we need to do, right, as a result of working the 12 steps. So that's what the 12th step is about, carrying the message. So what's the message? The message isn't just, you know, the size of my body or how much I weigh. It's part of the message because it's a physical, one of the things where, when I've done service in all of its forms as well, like we've heard already today, I'm one of those people who likes to kind of take things apart and put them back together and see how they work. And that led me to wanting to do everything at the group level, wanting to do intergroup and public information and professional outreach and then region service and world service delegate as well. But I'm not patting myself on the back when I say that I totally believe that service is a privilege and a blessing, and I'm grateful that I get to do that. But you know, along the way, like I said, life comes in, And there have been times when I wasn't able to do the things that I wanted to do. I went through breast cancer treatment. My biggest thought was staying abstinent through that. And my sponsor held my hand every step of the way, God bless her, and so many other people in program. I broke my leg and I was in a wheelchair for months, and people did service for me, came and picked me up and brought me to meetings with wheelchair and all. It was really something. And so I had to learn how to be on the receiving end of that as well and accept the fact that I wasn't able to do some of the other things. Although I did a lot more of things like sponsoring or outreach calls or meetings, just whatever I could do. And like I said, staying abstinent was my priority. We one of the years that I was a delegate, we voted on the definition of abstinence is the action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. Spiritual, emotional, and physical recovery is the result of living the Overeaters Anonymous 12-step program. That was voted on unanimously. So I have to look at every aspect of it in order to really be able to be useful or do what I'm called to do. My main objective is to, like it says in the steps, to ask God what his will is for, or however you want to say it, higher power, power greater than myself, what is best for me, for my life, for my recovery, and then do that. So I do what I can when I can. Like I said, the part of carrying the message, I love what it says in OA, each day we live well, we are well. I love that, you know, and the tools and the steps help me do that. I've heard it said that the tools help me stay abstinent and the steps help me live abstinent. And that's been my experience. You know, when I have that step one true admission that I am powerless, it isn't like, well, time to throw in the towel and, you know, give up. That means that gives me the opportunity to work my steps and tap into that power greater than myself. And then I can do service. And then we talk about it being slimming. You know, it really is, but being abstinent and putting down the trigger foods, being honest about what those are, and what I need to eat sober, like I said, that is really slimming. you know, I've been the same weight now for over 9.5 years. Not, like I said, not patting myself on the back. I would not be able to do that without all of this program. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that. I'm 64 years old now, and this is an experience that I've never had before in my life. But what's greater than that is the freedom from the obsession and compulsion that I have, and how much more it energy and thought power, mind, you know, my availability of my thinking that I have to put forward in my program. And it means everything to me. My program isn't like something that I do in my spare time. You know, my program is, thank you
both.
It's not just part of my life. I am alive because of program. I have no doubt that I would not be alive had it not been for program. And I get to have this spiritual path, and service is absolutely essential, where I get to be present and caring. These are things that were absolutely foreign to me before. We've already heard today, you know, it's like, what's in it for me? I only showed up to lose the weight, period. I had no idea there was going to be all this other stuff and this spiritual path, and that I was going to be interested in a power greater than myself and being of service. I had no idea. I figured I was going to lose the weight, see ya, and that was going to be that. And it was pretty much how I floundered around the first couple of years and ended up in a very difficult relapse, and then coming out the other side with a new perspective, a different perspective on what I needed to do. But the entire program exists because of service. Everything is done on a volunteer basis. We wouldn't be here. And everyone is volunteering, like we've already heard, shared already today. And the fact that I even want to do that is probably as much of a miracle as me not eating compulsively and addictively one day at a time. You know, it's really amazing. But I feel, you know, like in the preamble where we say our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, because I've got them all. You know, the whole spectrum. I will restrict, like I've been lost in the desert for days, and I will compulsively overeat without being able to stop to save my life, that's for sure. It says to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. And that's probably some of my favorite service to do, like our responsibility pledge, always to extend the hand and heart of OA to those who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. I want that hand and heart of OA coming from me to speak to all of the miracles that the program has to offer. I show up for meetings. I think probably my favorite thing to do is sponsoring and being a sponsor, because I learn so much both ways. It's a two-way street. And that's probably my favorite thing, but I do love reaching out to newcomers. The newcomers are the most important people, and I want them to hear a message of hope, that message of hope that we have, that anyone can stop eating compulsively and addictively and lose the obsession and desire to do so. Because if it could happen for me, I know it can happen for anyone. I would never have dreamed, thank you, Barbara. I would never have dreamed had anyone told me 20 years ago, really even 10 years ago, described a typical day in my life that I would be abstaining from things that I was eating compulsively and addictively, sugar and flour and coffee and things that I could not stop eating to save my life, that I would be shocked. So I wouldn't believe it. So I think that my commitment to abstinence fuels my desire to be of service, and my desire to be of service, it strengthens my commitment to my abstinence. And I'm so very grateful to be here. Thank you so much for letting me be of service.
Awesome. All right, I am going to stop the recording.